Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome in to the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. I'm your fearless leader, Todd Furman, joined as always by Payne Insider. College football, week two on the docket. Some very interesting results, Payne, from what we saw from programs who probably expected to be in a little better position after 60 minutes of football were in the books.
Week one was tough. A lot of scares that we saw from Penn State. I think we gauge things probably a little different than our listeners. I know that. I don't know how deep we want to get into it, but there were certainly some teams that I felt underachieved, and then there were teams that I thought played much better than the public would think they played, even in losing efforts.
Yeah, I think that's always a great place to start. And of course, we'll have all of our big game analysis with Dusty Dvorak, who'll join us in a matter of minutes. Later in the show, we'll talk to Dave Mason about the sportsbook perspective. I have to imagine they fared relatively well. But Payne, I don't really know even where to start. I mean, with some of these power programs in terms of what jumped off the page, whether it's Michigan's anemic offense and Matador-style offensive line, a slightly misleading final score from your beloved Florida State Seminoles, and that disappointing loss to Virginia Tech, Miami looking ill-prepared to take on LSU, who did nothing, in my estimation, offensively, Alabama dominant once again. I mean, the floor is yours in terms of what you saw that surprised you the most, whether it's in a positive or negative direction.
Let's go with Michigan, because I think this will probably make people laugh. And I know our friends at betonline.ag released a prop this week on Jim Harbaugh's next job. So, you know, that vibe is out there after four straight losses. But I think the way we assess games, you know, as professional bettors is drastically different than the casual fan. And, you know, the scoreboard is the only thing that matters for passionate fans, you know, for the standings, players and coaches. And then when we look at like the AP polls, the scoreboard is the only thing that matters. For us, I care about what happens on the field, like each and every single play. We are grading every single snap. And so, you know, for Michigan, when you factor in the opponent they played, the venue, when you incorporate your turnover luck and you look at the metrics, and Michigan was nearly 12% more successful on offensive snaps than Notre Dame, by the gambler's point of view, and this will sound crazy, Michigan turned in one of the top 10 performances of the entire week, and it came with a loss. We talked about this all last year, and I know I got called a homer because we talked about FSU for about 11 minutes on 9 hours of preview content, and Florida State certainly deserved to lose that game. That's not the case I'm going to make. But again, when you look at all these metrics, and this is how we determine value moving forward, we saw Virginia Tech. They were actually outgained by Florida State. They accumulated the greatest turnover luck of any team in all of week one. There was actually 6 fumbles. That's a 50-50 proposition usually on who recovers them. Virginia Tech got every single one of them. You look at field position, there was about 375 yards of field position advantage for Virginia Tech. You obviously have the bumble there at the goal line. Probably should have been a touchdown for Florida State. Instead, they end up with a field goal there. You miss a chip shot field goal. You know, through the first half, Florida State was averaging about 6 yards per play. So, again, it's just like a different vibe how we look at these games and gauge these teams. And I think the casual fan, and honestly, this is what creates value in the market. This is how we find value with these teams. The scoreboard doesn't necessarily indicate what transpired on the field.
And that's one of the, I mean, most prescient questions to kind of ask. I mean, how much overreaction do you typically think we see from week one to week two? Obviously, we get into the meat and potatoes portion of the schedule in October. We have a pretty good idea of what these teams are, but I feel early on in September, and this isn't a leap of faith, that both odds makers and bettors alike are still really trying to assess and quantify some of these performances.
No question about it. We're seeing a lot of overinflation based on these early performances. And I think you have to, right? Like, you play an FCS opponent, you don't want to get too crazy with it. But I will say this, it will shock some, but you're going to move teams more precipitously, I think, in the first couple weeks than you would by week 7, 8, or 9, right? There's less movement on a team in week 7 to week 8 as opposed to early on in the season. So it becomes this game that bookmakers and bettors are playing against each other. And there's, you know, some of these teams are ugly this week, but, you know, we talked off air, and it's not a game that we're endorsing, because I know I just want to give out numbers here and people kind of go haywire, and I appreciate that you value our opinions. But we talked about this off air. A game like Rice Hawaii, it's now 17.5. What did you make that just last week? I know we talked about this off air.
You want to laugh? I mean, my number on this game, including a little bit of home field advantage, would have been in that 10.5 range. And that's me being down on Rice coming into the season.
Right. And so, like, again, not endorsing it a play. And a lot of people, you know, just are so focused on their power numbers. There's other elements, obviously. And when you're dealing with Hawaii, you got significant travel and all that. But that just kind of paints the picture that we can see weeks 1 to week 2, just perception-based full touchdown moves.
It's always crazy, especially early in the season. We'll try and get a little bit more into this theory throughout September, as our goal is always to make you, our loyal listeners, a little bit smarter with your investments, especially when we don't have time to go into every single game on the schedule. But we do have a handful of marquee matchups to break down this week. For all the big game analysis, we welcome in the third member of our Bet the Board team, a man that had his call of a TJ Vasher catch damn near go viral over the weekend. Dusty, a man past his prime playing-wise and of your size shouldn't be moving so quickly in the booth. You can do a lot of damage to yourself, my friend.
You're correct. I got to be a little bit smarter. It's a long season. Don't want to get put on the IR already. All I know is TJ Vasher made an unbelievable play. And I thought the react was very candid. But you know what? 350,000 views on Twitter. I don't know what makes it go viral, but, I mean, whatever it takes, we darn near got there. So that was a lot of fun week one. We had some fireworks, but clearly that catch, I'll be surprised if it doesn't stand as the best catch in college football this year.
You know, it shows that youthful enthusiasm, which is good to have, and it carries into the broadcast. Before we get into the games themselves, I had a couple questions for you. And one of the first things that jumps out to me, Dusty, everyone talks all the time in relation to football. They say teams make the biggest leap from their first game to their second game. Is this actual truth, or do you see this as a cliche as far as how we should be applying it to our handicapping this weekend?
Well, I mean, it just depends. I mean, I think it can be true in some cases. But, I mean, can Alabama get that much better than where they were in week one? I mean, it looked pretty damn good to me. So, I mean, I think it just depends. I definitely think for a lot of these schools that played lesser opponents, they're going to get a much more physical test, and they're going to find out a lot more about their football team. So, players know that, coaches know that. So, you would think that if you were coming off an FCS opponent like several of our matchups were, you'd have a, you know, a better sense of focus coming into week number two, because even players, coaches, everyone knows what those games are. It's not a true test. It's not a real, doesn't give you a true idea of where you are as a team. So week number two, definitely an opportunity to get better. But I'd say more cliche than reality. It's just something easy for everybody to say. But, I mean, you guys know as well as I do, the more times you do something together as a team or as a group, typically you're going to get better and more comfortable.
Well, it kind of provides the perfect segue in a game that you'll be on the call for between Mississippi State and Kansas State, where Miss State, a 9-point favorite at betonline.ag, a total that sits at 54. It's come down a little bit since the opening. And Payne, want to get your take first on this particular matchup. When you look at these two teams, as Dusty mentioned, they got their FCS tune-ups. I mean, how much do you read into it as far as a power number is concerned? Mississippi State absolutely embarrasses Stephen F. Austin with a backup 63-6. Kansas State, well, they need to work a little bit harder to get through South Dakota. Does it do anything to change your outlook or how you'd assess these teams for this coming weekend?
Well, initially I saw this opener, it was 3.5, and so that was a little low. Now that we're trending towards double digits, it's a much tougher task. I would envision seeing, you know, just a more engaged Wildcats team, right? They got their asses chewed out for like the last 2 days just from that lack of focus. They had 13 penalties for 129 yards. Bill Snyder was just none too happy. So I'd expect a team that's probably more buttoned up and focused this week. I do have to think some of these issues just come from uncertainty at quarterback. We touched on this a little bit in the previews. When you look at those two quarterbacks, Delton and Thompson, they're just polar opposites. I I just don't think the offense can get in good form or good rhythm when you're interchanging two guys that are just completely different. I liked what I saw from Mississippi State, obviously. I know it was Stephen F. Austin, but they did have their backup quarterback and still averaged 8 yards per play. I love Joe Moorhead's offense. I think the big matchup in this game is up front, right? That Bulldogs defensive line, very good. Finished third in adjusted line yards last year, sixth in adjusted sack rate. I know it was an FCS opponent, but they did the same thing. 8.5 tackles for loss, 3 sacks. When you look at Kansas State, they're going to have to be buttoned up front. They got 5 returning linemen, 120 career starts. Whoever wins that battle, I think, is going to cover this number.
Dusty, when you look at the film for this game, knowing that you're going to be on the call Saturday morning at 11 o'clock Central on ESPN, Kansas State, some of the things you saw week one when they slipped by South Dakota going to haunt them all season long, whether it's the quarterback uncertainty like Payne mentioned, or are you able to pick up a few other things that went, you know what, we like Kansas State win total under, and there's nothing that's going to get me off of that position after 60 minutes of football.
Listen, a 27-24 win over South Dakota at home isn't going to get me excited about much. But when you dig into the game, the score isn't very indicative of how Kansas State played. Payne touched on it. You know, it's kind of the anti-Bill Snyder football. We call it Snyder ball around here, and that's no penalties, taking care of the football, run the ball, possess it, play keep away. They did not check the boxes in penalties, 13, 4 turnovers, okay? That's terrible. 2 picks, and they put the ball on the ground twice. The Kansas State defense really dug in, and South Dakota didn't move the ball really at all in the second half. It was a pick six for a touchdown and a fumble that set them up for a field goal. So I think when you really look at it and you dig into it, there's some good to take from it. Kansas State's offensive line did not play quite as well as you would like. Dalton Reiser is an All-American at offensive tackle, and as Payne mentioned, 5 returning starters. So, I trust that group, though they didn't look great. They know that they've got a much tougher competition this week with an outstanding Mississippi State defensive front 7. You know, I'm with you. I think Skylar Thompson's the guy for me. He throws it better, and he still at least gives you a running element, which we all know with Kansas State and Bill Snyder, you have to have that type of element with the offense. So, Skylar Thompson came in, threw the touchdown pass at the end to Isaiah Zuber, and kind of was able to get that victory. I think he's the guy. I think he's the better quarterback, and he makes him more multidimensional, which they're going to need against this Mississippi State defense. And you mentioned the defensive line, Jeffrey Simmons, Montez Sweat, each 3.5 tackles for loss, 2 sacks for Montez Sweat. I just look at the depth of this defensive line. They go 10 deep, and they roll guys. They keep fresh legs on the field. And Bob Shoup, first-year defensive coordinator, he was bringing the pain against Stephen F. Austin. I mean, blitzes off the edge, left and right, 17 tackles for loss, guys. They made a statement week number one. That's a Mississippi State record. Big key for this game, it is that line play. If Kansas State can't block Mississippi State up front and establish the run, especially on first down, they were not good on first down. If they get behind the chains and they get in third and unmanageable situations, could be a long day for Kansas State. If they're good on first down, they can possess the football, control that clock, play that traditional Snyder ball. It could get interesting. Kansas State solid on defense, but you guys referenced the offense under Joe Moorhead. We will see Nick Fitzgerald. He will be the starter. He set out week number one, but Keaton Thompson was fantastic with 7 total touchdowns. Let's face it, Stephen F. Austin was not any type of litmus test. First play of the game, it goes for a 53-yard touchdown on just a running back's swing screen. So, the competition, it's hard to really judge how good they've picked up this Joe Moorhead offense, but they got players in the backfield. Nick Fitzgerald going to make his first start. 10 different receivers caught the ball, so they're at least picking up the idea of distributing the football and taking their shots down the field. This is an interesting game. I know I've been there in Manhattan many a times. It's loud. It's crazy. It's raucous. Mississippi State will get the best of the Kansas State Wildcat fans. Is it going to be enough, to keep this game close? We're going to find out. But I like the fact that you look at that score of 27-24, and I think most people will say this is going to be a steamroll Mississippi State. I would say just not so fast. Kansas State is a better team than their week one final score indicates.
And here I was hoping that we were going to get our first loss of the season against Kansas State, and it was going to come by 20-plus points. You guys had me a little bit more concerned. Would have loved to win against South Dakota. Some interesting notes to keep in mind on this game. The number 18 Bulldogs, and of course around here, we don't put a whole lot of stake in the popularity polls. First ranked non-conference opponent to come to Manhattan since Auburn in 2014, and only the second since USC way back in 2002. This will be only the fifth time Kansas State has played a top 25 team before the start of conference play, which Coach Schneider at the helm. And keep in mind, Kansas State just 5-9 against the spread the last 14 games they've played in Manhattan. From a non-conference showdown involving an SEC team to a pair of SEC teams in a game that could ultimately decide the SEC West, it's Georgia in Columbia taking on South Carolina. The Bulldogs will come a 9.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. The total we've seen on the climb out to 55, 55.5. And Payne, game of the year line for this contest was set at minus 14. Do we feel this is too much of an overcompensation, or was the number a little bit inflated when it was first set during the summer months?
I think the side is interesting. I think the number is right here from the side perspective. The total is what we've seen a move on early this morning. And I think a lot of that has to do with some question marks with that Georgia defense. I know they were very good in game one, only allowed 2.8 yards per play. But this is a little bit different beast here with South Carolina's offense. And I think what we saw with South Carolina's offense, we predicted they'd go a little bit more tempo, and they did. That was the biggest thing. 20% more plays in their week one game than their average last season. I think it's evident, even though Muschamp's a defensive guy, he knows where his bread's going to be buttered this year, and it's going to be offensively. So I think with the uptick in tempo from South Carolina, some question marks in that Georgia defense, that's why we're really seeing this total take off. There are some guys that are potentially back. I know Tyreek McGee practiced yesterday. I was told he took about 25% of the first team snaps. He looked good. If he plays, that's a huge boost to the Bulldogs secondary. They'll need him this week for sure.
When you look at this game, the Gamecocks back in the top 25 for the first time since 2014 when the polls were released. Dusty, as far as your outlook on South Carolina, when you go to a tempo offense, last season when they lost against Georgia, they ran 53 plays. That's not going to quite get it done. Do you see any matchups that Jake Bentley, Dowdell, and Samuel are more than capable of taking advantage of to at least allow South Carolina to play with a lead, being such a heavy underdog in this spot?
Well, you know, I think Jake Bentley, he looked great in his week one debut, really good in the RPO game, a guy that's athletic and just continue to get better and better. I had them in their bowl win over Michigan, and I thought in the second half of that game, he really matured. And you're exactly right. They want to run more tempo. They want to get more plays. They want to get defenses on their heels, especially following big plays. They're going to put their foot on the accelerator and really try to go. I'm getting the ball to Debo Samuel, guys. I mean, this is an All-American who missed last year with a broken leg. He's back. He already had 8 touches in week number one. I think he's a difference maker, a game changer. You've got to find a way to get him the football. And, you know, obviously South Carolina is going to need to run the ball. They ran well with Rico Dowdle, Tyson Williams. They had a nice 1-2 punch, almost 7 yards a carry. That's going to have to continue because I think if they can get something going on the ground, which is going to be tough against a really stout front 7 for Georgia, then I think that's going to open up some things in the passing game for Jake Bentley. But let's face it, he's got to play great. To me, he's the key to this game. If they're not able to make some throws down the field to get some splash, explosive plays, I think it could be a long day because I don't know if South Carolina is going to be able to line up and just move the chains over and over and have long, methodical drives down the field. I don't think that's the way that they're going to be able to attack Georgia. They're going to have to establish a run game, take their shots down the field, and I think explosive plays are going to be the real key. You know, with Georgia, Terry Goodwin's going to be back at wide receiver. I thought Demetrius Robertson, the Cal transfer, he showed some of his splash playability with a 72-yard touchdown run. DeAndre Swift didn't get going too much, but I like a lot of what he has in store. And you know, Jake Fromm, I thought he looked solid once again. And we did get a chance to see Justin Fields for the first time. So offensively, Georgia littered with talent really at all skill positions, whether it's receiver, 2 different quarterbacks that can get it done, and guys in the backfield. So, you know, South Carolina is going to, you know, I look for them to really try to bring quite a bit of pressure, stack the box, and try to slow down that Georgia rushing attack. The problem if you do that, though, is that Jake Fromm has shown the ability. He's got weapons outside. He'll take advantage of one-on-one situations if you put him in that spot. I do think South Carolina, though, they went to Athens last year and they played a tough physical game, kept it pretty close at 24-10. This is a huge game week number two, and Georgia's got a lot of turnover defensively, so I think they're catching them at the right spot. But imperative to me that they slow down Georgia's rushing attack, and that Jake Bentley really has a special day at quarterback if they're going to pull the upset at home.
Dusty, this early in the season, teams looking to try and employ tempo, knowing what the climate could and should be in Columbia for the game on Saturday, hot and sticky. How difficult can it be on defenses that aren't quite up to 100% as you get deep into the third quarter and early in the fourth?
Well, that's when you better have depth. I mean, to me, teams that can have depth and you can constantly keep fresh legs on the field, those are teams that deal better with tempo. If you're leaning, you know, primarily on just starters playing all the time, they're going to get gassed. And, you know, if there's that big drop down between your first and your second group, that's when a tempo team, I feel, can really take advantage of you. The good thing with Georgia, they've recruited so well. They are so deep. You think that they can, you know, do a nice job of rolling guys in and out throughout different series and possessions to try to keep those fresh legs. But if you're sticking with just a certain group, if Kirby Smart doesn't feel that they have the depth to be able to roll guys, to me, that's whenever the tempo, as you get into late in the third quarter, you get into the fourth quarter, that's when you really see it take its toll.
Payne, one last thing on the number. I mean, clearly we have to be more precise and diligent in terms of the way we lean when we talk about point spreads, as per some of our listeners after last week's episode. When you look at this number at 10, which way do you think it moves? I mean, can you see an appetite for professional bettors on the dog, or do you think this number appears maybe a shade low as far as laying it with the favorite?
Yeah, you know, kind of touched on this a little bit at the beginning. When I look at this number, I can't see it getting too far away from where it stands right now. I do think we continue to see this total creep out, right? 50.5, you're now looking at 55 some places, and it's just that combination of what Dusty talked about, question marks on Georgia's defensive side of the ball. They're replacing 6 of their top 10 guys that played in the box last year. Terry Godwin back is massive for that offense. And I think on the other side of the ball, when you look at South Carolina, there are some serious question marks about their defense. Coastal Carolina was 103rd in offensive efficiency last year, put up five yards per play last week. So there is some serious concerns, I think, for both defenses. And when you implement the tempo that we're talking about, that's why this total continues to creep out. And I think it will continue to do so.
It should have a little more fireworks on the docket than what we've grown accustomed to in this rivalry, especially knowing the implications it'll have in the SEC race, East race going forward. From SEC country, head out to Big 10 / Big 12 with the annual Cy-Hawk showdown. It's Iowa, a 4-point favorite, total in this game of 47 against Iowa State. The Cyclones dealt a little bit of an unfortunate hand. They saw one drive on offense, one drive on defense against South Dakota State before their opening game was canceled. Iowa, extremely average in the first half, building a 3-0 lead against NIU before they ultimately wore them down. Dusty, what kind of disadvantage could you potentially see for the Cyclones not having that full first game under their belt when they take on such a hated rival across the state?
Well, that week one game is where you find out as a coaching staff, as a team, where you're at, what you got. New faces, new players. Like for Iowa State, Joe Lanning, who was the man of that defense in the middle. He did so much for them, and also in short yardage situations whenever he would come in and they'd go put him at quarterback in short yardage. So what's that look like now with a new quarterback, quote-unquote, of the defense? You would learn a little bit if they were able to play that game last week. You don't know that. So you kind of go into this rivalry game on the road, a team that's beat you 3 straight times. You want this game. And you still don't really have many questions answered about your football team. So, you know, Matt Campbell's a heck of a coach. He did one of the better turnaround jobs that we saw in college football last season. But definitely a disadvantage without his players kind of getting that, you know, that final run through before they play a big game, and to really kind of assess what the new pieces look like and what this team's identity and mindset's going to be.
Payne, when you look at these two teams, we know you are a massive Matt Campbell fan, to say the least, and what he's done with Iowa State, as Dusty alluded to. I mean, how do you approach the Cyclones, and are they capable of kind of attacking Iowa? Obviously, with better athletes than what we saw from Northern Illinois, but was Iowa the first 30 minutes more of what we're going to see this season, or was Iowa over the second half of the game when they were able to run the football for chunks at a time more indicative of how we handicapped the Hawkeyes this week and, you know, subsequent weeks?
You know, I think Iowa just basically ended up leaning on NIU, right? That game was a little different than the final score indicated. And I know Iowa wasn't at full strength. They were without Jackson and Wirfs, both offensive tackles. They are off suspension this week, and I think that's smart timing, obviously, when you look at Iowa State's front seven. But I just didn't see a lot of playmakers for Iowa, and now there's talks this week about Ivory Kellen-Martin, the leading running back for Iowa, potentially being out. He sprained his ankle. He is a game-time decision. So if you don't have that weapon there, things get a little bit dicey for Iowa for sure. I just don't know where the points are going to come from when I look at this. For me, I initially looked Iowa State, but Dusty made good mention of that first game, not having that really under your belt. And I know it's a little different situation here. Like, Iowa State went through the motions a little bit. They got lathered up in pregame. They did have a couple snaps in that game, and it ultimately got canceled. But one thing that we've seen, and I hate to bring the NFL into this, but that parallel of the NFL preseason, the teams in that Hall of Fame game that have one extra game under their belt do extremely well in game two, and we see the market adjust. It's one of the better bets in the preseason that you can make. It seems to get steamed every single year. That team who played in the Hall of Fame game in game two going against a team that has not played yet seems to have quite the edge.
Hey, on this game, you know, I look at this and I think, you know, Payne hit on it. Iowa just doesn't have the playmakers. They don't have the guys on offense. So, you know, Iowa State defensively was outstanding last year. Did a lot of drop eight, just rush three, and they really stymied a lot of Big 12 offenses. Different beast here against Iowa. They just want to ground and pound. And what they'd like to do is not have Nate Stanley put the ball in the air. I mean, he was not efficient last week against NIU. He's 11 of 23, a touchdown. He threw a pick. So, I mean, the real key here, Iowa wants to run the football. They want to possess it. They want to grind it out. They're going to go running back by committee. Ray Lima is an outstanding nose tackle for Iowa State. I mentioned Joe Lanning's not there on the back end, but they do have that key piece in the middle of that defense that was integral last year, and he's going to play a big role in this game. If Iowa State, if they can shut down that Iowa rushing attack and force Nate Stanley to put the ball up, that's a huge advantage for the Cyclones. Also with the Cyclones, they do have their quarterback Kyle Kemp back, who came in and was a really solid starter for them at the end of the year. You know, they're losing some of their big targets on the outside at wide receiver. But David Montgomery, man, he's one of the better running backs in college football that nobody talks about. Led the country in 109 missed tackles last year. He's a tough guy to tackle. Went for over 100 against Iowa last year. Expect a heavy dose of David Montgomery in the screen game, in the run game. That Iowa defense is salty. They're going to get after it. But the one thing I like better about Iowa State, they've got a quarterback that can stretch the defense and put the ball down the field. If Iowa wants to load up and try to take David Montgomery away, Iowa State has a counter where it doesn't really feel that Iowa does.
Yeah, you mentioned Nate Stanley, only 108 yards in the opener against NIU. Of course, last season in this matchup, threw five touchdowns and for more than 300 yards in a shootout, a 44-41 overtime victory for Iowa. And as Payne suggests, I don't quite think we're going to see that same type of offensive explosion. This total did open 49, has trended down to 47. It'll be very interesting to see where this first half number opens when it does later this week. And back to the SEC for an interconference showdown between Clemson and Texas A&M. It's the Clemson Tigers, a 12.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total in this game, 54. Fifth meeting all time between these proud programs. And Payne, will start with the head coaches. Jimbo Fisher matches up with a little bit different cast of characters against Dabo Swinney yet again.
Yeah, that's the perfect intro. And I think Jimbo is clearly aware of his opponent here. He's familiar with them. You know, this would be huge to pull off this upset. Certainly, you know, they're in retool mode. The cupboard isn't bare. You have to like what Jimbo did last year, right? Undermanned Florida State team with turmoil and a true freshman quarterback went into Death Valley. And with 6.5 minutes to go, Jimbo had his boys down three in the ball in Clemson territory. So that final score is a little bit misleading. The two things that do intrigue me about this game is Jimbo Fisher's offense, right? You know, we're kind of all creatures of habit, and whether we acknowledge it or not, most of us listen to what our critics say, and many times we take that negative criticism, and if there's truth behind it, we make that adjustment, and it seems like that's what Jimbo Fisher has done. He brought in an offensive coordinator in Daryl Dickey from Memphis. He's a tempo guy, and suddenly 99 plays for Jimbo's offense at Texas A&M last week. That was number three in the country. Only East Carolina and Monroe had more offensive snaps in week one. I want to see if that continues or if he goes back to his old ways. So that'll be interesting for me there. The second thing, when I look at Clemson defensively, the way you're going to beat them this year, in my opinion, is get that ball out quick. Neutralize the defensive line. The weak spot of that defense is their secondary. I know it's extremely talented, but they're thin there. There's not a lot of experience. So when he made Mond the quarterback, he's not the better passer. So is Nick Starkle going to get a shot in this game if things start to go awry? He is the better passer. And I think that's how you have to attack Clemson. If they stick with Mond, the running quarterback, I can't see this game going very successfully. Would not be shocked to see this number tick out closer to 14.
Yeah, just a couple of high-level numbers from Texas A&M season-opening victory. Travion Williams, 240 yards rushing, the second-best individual performance in school history. You mentioned Kellen Mond, 17 of 25, 184 yards, two touchdowns. They outgained Northwestern State 758-251. But as we talked about, when you play FCS schools, you can't win national championships. Dusty, Payne mentioned the quarterback situation at Texas A&M, not being sure that Jimbo has the right guy. How do you think Clemson handles balancing reps between Kelly Bryant and Trevor Lawrence? These two quarterbacks have both come out and said the right things thus far, but you ultimately have to believe it's going to wear on these two competitors that they want to be the alpha male responsible for the offense.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued to see how Dabo handles that this week. You know, when you're playing Furman, and not Utah, but when you're playing Furman University.
I bring it every week, all right? I bring it every goddamn week around here. I don't want to hear it.
But when you play them, you have the luxury to fire whoever you want out there, right? When you go into College Station and Jimbo's going to have his team ready to play, I don't know if you have that same luxury. That's why I think it's going to be very interesting what they do, because you want the reality? Trevor Lawrence outplayed Kelly Bryant. I mean, it's just the reality of it. In five drives, he had 31 points, three touchdown passes. He had a better QBR, five drives for Kelly Bryant. They scored 17 points. He did have one touchdown pass, but Trevor Lawrence ran the offense better. I mean, he's the better thrower. I don't think that that means that we're going to see more Trevor Lawrence necessarily, because they had the entire offseason to let this thing play out. And Dabo Swinney was, he stood fast and firm, and he said that Kelly Bryant won this job. So I don't think that means we're going to see Trevor Lawrence more than what we should anticipate. But I do think it's an interesting situation. I'm not one that ever likes rolling quarterbacks. I'm just not. I don't like it. I think it's tough on a quarterback to get confidence, to get into a rhythm. It's a different voice inside the huddle. I understand that it can work different places, but for me, I like to pick a guy, and at the quarterback position, that's not one that I want to see constant guys, you know, changing and rolling through. So as it relates to Texas A&M, that's a loud, hostile place. I've played on a team that was number one in the country way back when Texas A&M played in the Big 12, and it can be a little bit overwhelming at times when they start to do the sway. So Trevor Lawrence making his first time on the road, that leads me to believe we'll likely see more Kelly Bryant than Trevor Lawrence. So I don't think he's the better player. I think he's the safer play and a guy that has been in hostile territories. He's been in big games before. And I think that they trust the fact that he's going to take care of the football. And my guess is Dabo Swinney's going to think that's going to be enough. The key to this game, I think it's simple. The only chance Texas A&M has in this game is to be able to continue to establish the rushing attack. That Clemson defensive line in front seven that we've talked about ad nauseum, can Texas A&M up front, can they knock him off the football? Can they get Travion Williams, who just had an unbelievably explosive day against Northwestern State, and I would say Kellen Mond to that degree, you know, he didn't run the ball very much. He is the better runner of the two between him and Starkle. If you're going to play Kellen Mond, I think you're doing your offense and him a disservice by not allowing him to utilize his best skill set. We'll see if that's something that Jimbo, you know, kind of, you know, an ace in the hole, so to speak, maybe a little bit more quarterback run game, keep that Clemson defense on their heels. But if they can't run the football, I think it's going to be a long day in College Station for the Aggies.
Dusty, I'm glad you brought it up, because I was going to ask you about the home field advantage at Kyle Field. And never having been a player in that kind of environment myself, we know it gets talked up. It's a night game there. It's going to be an electric atmosphere. But how does that ultimately work against the home team if they start slow? And I guess on the converse, how important is it for Clemson to go out, establish pace, physicality, and make a few big plays to maybe take, you know, that 75,000 screaming fans out of the game and make it a disadvantage for the home team?
that baby's up to about 90-95 now with that renovation. I call Auburn, Texas A&M.
Well, College Station, so I feel like everybody's got to try and get in there one way or another.
That's right. You know, like there'll be like 30,000 at Yale practice on Friday night. They may even get 35 with the number two Clemson Tigers coming to town. Listen, I think you're exactly right. I think the start of this game, if Clemson comes out sluggish or allows Texas A&M to get an explosive play, that crowd is into it, man, and they're not going anywhere. They're there for the long haul. If you come out and you establish yourself, you punch Texas A&M in the mouth, that crowd's going to kind of – you know, they're going to wither a little bit. I mean, it's a good fan base. It's a raucous crowd. But like all fan bases, if your team doesn't give you something to be excited about, to make noise about, it's tough. You kind of lose some of that, you know, that momentum. You lose some of that, just that electricity there within the stadium. So I totally agree. For A&M, crucial that they get off to a hot start. And for Clemson, if they get off to a hot start, this thing could get out of control or could get pretty one-sided pretty quickly.
Payne, one last thing on this game, and it's more a general question regarding Clemson going forward. I mean, we talked about how good this defense is, and I don't think it's lost on anybody. When you look at this team, I mean, do you think that they're more prone to playing games that are going to be unders or overs given the current composition of their roster?
Yeah, it's tough to say because last year, if it's Kelly Bryant, this is going to change drastically, right? They weren't explosive with Kelly Bryant last year. If there is another quarterback in play throughout the course of the season, then this could be an over team. We love their defense, obviously. But, you know, with change of quarterback, that could change things dramatically for Clemson. And I think in this game, Clemson's going to have a lot of offensive success. And we talk about playing, you know, weaker opponents, FCS opponents in week one, not being able to draw a lot. I think it's scary that Texas A&M's defense gave up 5.5 yards per play against Northwestern State. So Clemson should score at will here.
You don't sleep on the Demons. We know they bring it every single week, but yeah, not exactly ideal for the Aggies that had some question marks on the defensive side of the ball. They'll clearly be tested in prime time come Saturday night. From the Midwest to the West Coast, a showdown in the Pac-12. It's Stanford playing host to USC. Stanford now a 4.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Actually, as I look at this, I should say they're a 5.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total in this game has been bet up from the open. We'll call it 55 right now. You look at Stanford in their opener. They finish with 50 yards rushing. It's third fewest in 8 seasons under Coach David Shaw. The Cardinal previously had won just 2 out of 10 games with Shaw when running for less than 100 yards. Dusty, when you look at Stanford, we know San Diego State was going to sell out to stop Bryce Love. Clearly, KJ Costello stepped up, got JJ Arcega-Whiteside involved. What do we need to see from this Cardinal offense and maybe from their defense to believe that they're a viable contender in the Pac-12?
Well, one thing I say, obviously you look at Bryce Love, he goes 18 carries for 29 yards and, you know, Stanford only runs for 50, and that's kind of eye-opening to say, oh man, what's going on? To me, that kind of tells me this is a more multidimensional offense than what David Shaw's had. I gave it up to KJ Costello. I thought he looked great. And what it's going to tell defenses out there, if you want to sell out to stop Bryce Love and this Cardinal rushing attack, you better have some quality guys in the back end that can play man-to-man coverage. Because KJ Costello, he's got tight ends. He's got JJ Arcega-Whiteside. I mean, Whiteside, 226, 3 touchdowns. The fades, the one-on-one deep balls were there. They were hitting on them. So I like that from Stanford because I think it's a matter of time before Stanford is able to run the football effectively. I believe in the physicality that they possess up front, and I think Bryce Love is a home run hitter. But if you want to overcompensate, that's fine. You can take one thing away, but now Stanford has the capability to burn you when you do that. Here's the other thing that I think is very scary and somewhat problematic for USC. They got torched on the ground by UNLV. Now, I don't want to take anything away from Lexington Thomas and what UNLV is doing there, but how do they run for 308 yards on USC's defense?
Dusty,
that's scary in my estimation.
I got the answer for you. The answer is it's the power of the bet the board best bet. We gave out UNLV plus 26.5, so the Trojans heard that. It circulated through the locker room, and they knew that they were going to be back on their heels against an underrated UNLV ground-and-pound attack.
Well, that sounds like a great theory. I'm just questioning, you know, how good that front seven is. I like the fact that Porter Gustin's back. Cameron Smith's been a fixture in the middle of that defense for a long time. But, man, that's just too many yards for me And now, so all of a sudden, I look at Clancy Pendergast, and he's got to be thinking, well, I'm not going to get run on again. So if he sells out, this could be a situation where KJ Costello has another big day against USC. On the other side, JT Daniels, I mean, I thought he was fantastic, and he threw the ball very well. Stephen Carr looked good, as we would expect. So I think that they're going to give Stanford defensively some issues. But I just – Stanford's always going to be tough. They're going to be physical. They're going to be gritty. And this is the first time JT Daniels going to be on the road, his first road start. I would not say it's going to be a hostile environment, but away from home against a Stanford defense that has definitely shown that they're not afraid to come after you and get after quarterbacks. You're asking a lot of a true freshman on the road in that type of situation. I'm not surprised this number's ticked up, because as we sit here right now, I definitely lean pretty heavily on the Stanford side of this one.
Payne, when you look at these two teams, and we always talk about how important it is in sports betting not to overreact, but also in college football that sometimes a 60-minute sample size, you don't want to underreact early in the season. Did anything change for you as far as overall season outlook in terms of how you wanted to handicap Stanford and USC going forward, given their bodies of work last weekend?
Yeah, absolutely. I know Stanford got the huge momentum score before half when Irwin just made like a ridiculous play on a turnover. But Stanford did outgain San Diego State by nearly 2.8 yards per play. And when you kind of put that in perspective, they had six suspensions. Bryce Love was held in check. And visually, Dusty mentioned this, I loved what KJ Costello looked like. He grew with each possession. You could see that. This is a guy that missed just a ton of time this offseason. He was dealing with the hip injury. He was still working his way back into game shape late in fall camp. So the timing, the rhythm, the form was off early. But man, that completely changed the final 30 minutes. I was also impressed with Stanford's defense. If you remove the 92-yard drive, the other 10 possessions for San Diego State, they averaged 13 yards a drive. And I don't want to rehash on this or pat ourselves on the back, because we don't need to rehash the UNLV game that we gave out last week. But there is a degree of USC running vanilla offense last week with Stanford on deck, but that game should have been much closer. Like, USC had 6.1 yards per play on offense. They gave up 5.6 on defense. USC has a true freshman quarterback. He was successful on 38% of his offensive snaps. Now you're going on the road to the farm. Like, I just think it's a tough task. And then you also got double revenge. Stanford lost both these games last year, including the Pac-12 championship. This game has been circled on the schedule, and I completely agree with this line move. Now, again, bit different, on the bye, 3-20 or whatever it was, as we're looking at it now, 5.5. So it's a much different set of circumstances. But for me, it's Stanford or pass for sure.
Dusty, one last thing on this game. We look at the two men matching wits on the sidelines. I mean, how do you try and assess David Shaw and his ability to get his team ready in this particular spot versus Clay Helton taking the true freshman on the road and some of the challenges he'll have developing a game plan catering to JT Daniels' strengths?
I'm a fan of both these coaches, first off. I think David Shaw, what he's done over his 8 years there, it speaks for itself. I don't think he's going to have any problem having his football team ready to play, in this situation. Clay Helton, he's dealt with, he wasn't a true freshman, but I mean, his former quarterback, Sam Darnold, they fired him in there when he was a freshman, and they were able, I remember a freshman and Sam Darnold going on the road against a really good Washington team and beating up on him. That was later in the season, not second game of the year, but we've seen Clay Helton have young quarterbacks and young offenses ready to go when they go face a daunting defense or a really tough task on the road. So I think Clay Helton, having called their one of their games last year, I like his demeanor. He's always calm, cool, collected, and I think that really wears off on his quarterback. So I think from that standpoint, he will have JT Daniels in a good place mentally. Now, it's a different situation when you're actually there on the road against a solid Stanford defense, and they're dialing up blitzes and they're coming after you. So I think Clay Helton will have JT Daniels ready to play. If for me, it's more about what Stanford's going to present defensively to give the true freshman issues.
And Dusty, I know we covered some of the biggest games on the schedule. Before we let you go this fine morning, what other games on the slate, maybe not necessarily from a gambling perspective, have your eye in terms of what we can learn about a few of the potential players in the college football landscape?
Well, I mean, you know, last week one of the games I really liked was West Virginia, and that sure that worked out pretty well. You know, I'll tell you a game that I like. I look at this number, and I really like Texas this week. And, you know, that's crazy to hear from an Oklahoma guy, right? And how do you like Texas after they lose to Maryland? Tulsa's not very good. And I look at that line, I think it's only right around 21 points. If that was Oklahoma, if that was Oklahoma State, that number would be closer to 31. And I think that, you know, this is a classic example of, you know, overreaction week number two. Texas, I think, is better than what they showed. Now, Sam Ellinger got to hold on to the football and not turn it over. But I think that, you know, Texas is going to be looking to make a statement before USC comes to town a week from now. And I look at that game as one that I don't think is priced just right. Tulsa, I think Tulsa's closer to a 4-touchdown dog than the 3-touchdown that's currently out there.
You can hear him. Go ahead, Dusty. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, as far as other games out there, you know, I think Florida-Kentucky is interesting. I don't know if Kentucky can keep that close, but what, 31 straight losses they've had to Florida. And you know, I was talking this week with Jordan Rogers on my radio show. He was very high on Dan Mullen and the Florida Gators. Love what he did with Felipe Franks. Love the fact that they had a little Tebow jump pass. So Mark Stoops, a buddy of mine, and I always root for him. But I want to see if this Florida Gator team is legit. They're a 14-point favorite. And I'm not sure exactly how I feel about the line, but I am intrigued to see if Dan Mullen can really have this thing turned around as quickly as what some people I'm talking to think that he has.
Going to be interesting to keep tabs in the Gators. Definitely a side that a number of us saw as potential sleepers offering value early on in the campaign while they get things sorted out. Encourage all of our listeners to tune in first thing Saturday morning, 11 o'clock Central Time. Dusty will be on the call in Manhattan, Kansas, where Mississippi State takes on Kansas State. Of course, you can follow Dusty on Twitter at Dusty Dvorak. Dusty, thanks as always for the analysis, and we'll look forward to chatting more extensively with you regarding Week 3 matchups and some of the things we learned during always a pivotal Week 2.
I love it, fellas. Here's the one thing. I love it if you guys follow me on Twitter. And by the way, the Bet the Board podcast following is strong, and I love being a part of this thing. But don't be tweeting no crazy stuff at me, please. Keep the crazy tweets for yourself, man. I got so much stuff on my plate. If you want to tweet crazy, go to Todd, go to Payne, but keep me out of it. That's all
Payne,
that I ask.
Payne, I don't think Dusty realizes what getting into gambling Twitter on a week-in, week-out basis was going to mean for his social media timeline.
Ooh. It's ugly, and it's always someone else's fault but their own. That's the biggest thing. It's like, Dusty, you went into that man's account and you placed that bet for him. You're always going to have that element when you cross over to the gambling side a little bit.
Hey, a little side note. So we're having our production meeting before week one, and we've got a great director, Turnberger, and we're sitting there in our meeting, and he said, "Hey, man, my son loves your podcast." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "It's his favorite podcast." So I'm not even sure what Turnberger's son's name is, but I thought it was pretty interesting that I'm getting ready for my week one matchup and our final production meeting, and the Bet the Board podcast got brought up. So even the fine folks at ESPN, directors, producers, even them and their family members know about this this fine show we've got going, boys.
The last question, Dusty, I mean, is he of legal gambling age, or are we catering to 12 and 13-year-olds? So it's really going to warm my heart, because I think that's about the age Payne and I got our start in this industry.
I cannot confirm nor deny any ages of podcast listeners or the people out there putting out various bets.
Always great perspective, Dusty. Enjoy the game this weekend and safe travels to Manhattan, my friend.
All right, guys. Enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you next week. Happy betting.
Payne, you love the fact that Dusty says he walks into those production meetings. People want to listen. They want to know what Bet the Board's thinking. Over under on the age of his producer's son, I'm going to set it 12 and a half.
That's probably good. And I wasn't going to divulge this story, but I texted you on Saturday, and there was a little kerfluffle with a FedEx package I was supposed to receive, and it didn't arrive. And so I was on the phone as games were starting, not the ideal situation, but it was sitting at a hub. And so I had to leave the house on game day to go pick up this package. And so I walk in, and there's a young kid that's behind the desk. I said, "Hey, did you get a phone call from like the main guy at FedEx?" He says, "My package is here." Yeah. And I look over the television, and it's actually Dusty's game, Ole Miss, Texas Tech. And there's two televisions with games on. I said, "Man, you got the life here. No one's in here. You got the TVs going with college football." And his response is, "Oh, yeah." got Ole Miss big. And I said, nice. And my first question was, what line did you get? He's like, oh, I actually took money line plus 108. And I said, okay, so you got on the decent side of the move. They're now a 2.5 point favorite. That's nice. And he goes, yeah, man. And I said, well, what sports book do you use? And I can't make this up. He says, betonline.ag. And I said, that's a good book. And I said, hey, have you ever heard of this podcast called Bet the Board? He goes, absolutely love it, man. Listen every single week. And I said, that's interesting. What do you think of the talent on the podcast? He's like, man, that Todd guy, he gets to me every now and then. And I said, man, tell me about it. And I just took my package and I walked out.
Hey, well, at least, you know, you're not the only one. Unfortunately for you, you get to deal with me on a more extended basis than of a lot of our listeners who can more or less mute me should they want to just listen to your analysis. And, of course, getting all of Dusty's intel on these games I think will be absolutely invaluable as we go forward. But aside from the three of us, Payne, there's one other man's perspective that I think is extremely important. We look to try and dissect a lot of these games. From the professional ranks earlier this week, he joins us to talk all things from the bookmaking side of the operation, college football related. You can follow him on Twitter at DaveMasonBOL. And Dave, first things first, we got to know, good opening weekend for the house, or are you guys going to be chasing uphill after week one?
Nah, great opening weekend. Couldn't ask for a better opening weekend. Numbers were up, which, it, you know, like I said a zillion times, I work on the marketing side of things, so we're always looking at those active numbers, people coming back to the site. People come to the site for the first time signing up, and those numbers are through the roof, so we're real happy with that. Good start to the football season there. And yeah, the results were really good. We lost a little bit on Ohio State. That was a good result for the players. WVU, West Virginia, good for the players. Bama was their biggest win. And the good for the house, Maryland was big. Notre Dame was huge, LSU was huge, and Virginia Tech real big as well. So there's three big primetime games all sided with the house. So yeah, we had a profitable week one of college football.
I know, Dave, and we ask this all the time, and I think Payne and I know the answer, but some of our new listeners might not. How important is it on a holiday weekend like that to have marquee programs playing on a standalone basis, not only Sunday night with LSU, Miami, and Virginia Tech, Florida State, just handle completely swell beyond the scopes of our wildest dreams?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the action on those two games was probably a little bit more than two times it would have been if it was played Saturday afternoon, probably 2.5 times more than it would have been on if it was played Saturday afternoon. So, yeah, getting those primetime games, those standalone primetime games between two ranked teams on national television, I mean, that's when nothing else is really going on. I mean, everybody's going to bet on something, and especially the end of the weekend too. You know, the guys that won on Saturday, they got big fat bank accounts, and the guys that lost are chasing their losses a little bit. So it's awesome. We should have them more often, but you do.
And Dave, as we transition to week two, we know not a lot of huge games on the card, but professional bettors can find an edge anywhere. Have we seen any early sharp action thus far?
We have Liberty plus 11, currently plus 8. Michigan over 52, that's up to 56.5. Kansas plus 6.5, that's down to 4. Air Force plus 10, that's down to 9. And Georgia over 50.5, that's up to 55.
And how's it looking for public action so far? Anything glaring there? Any major needs you think you'll need?
Yes, a ton. Absolutely a ton. The card might not be that impressive, but the public's pounding sides, man. TCU, 91% on TCU versus SMU. Michigan, despite their falling flat last weekend, 69% of the action on Michigan. Here's an interesting one. Appalachian State. We're taking a lot of action on Appalachian State. That just shows you how the bettors just, you know, that weekend, they'll ride a hot team, you know, a team that just comes out of nowhere. And 81% of the bets are on Appalachian State, and there's a lot of bets on Appalachian State. Mississippi State, 81%. Northwestern, 80%. Ohio State, again, 89%. Bama, again, 87%. Clemson 71% and Stanford 72%. So yeah, the action's good, man. Despite the kind of ho-hum card, people are betting.
Always appears to be the usual suspects. Interesting note on that Stanford USC game. I mean, that sets up to be one of the marquee contests in primetime Saturday night. So curious, Dave, to see ultimately what that decision looks like. And we know you're great about sharing that information on social media much closer to kickoff. For some of the folks, though, that may not have an account with betonline.ag, not sure why they wouldn't already with 1 week of college football already in the books, maybe for some of those people late to the party looking to try and reload from previous seasons, what kind of promotions are available at the shop this weekend?
Yes, sir. Head on over to betonline.ag and sign up for an account if you do not have one already. Use promo code 75BTB on your first ever deposit to get a 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account and have not used the Bet the Board reload bonus yet, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% reload. Max bonus is $1,000. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
That's Dave Mason. You can hear him every single Wednesday throughout the course of the college football season. And more importantly, you can follow him and should follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. Dave, let's hope that the week two slate is as profitable for you guys as week one. And we'll talk to you same time next week, my friend.
Awesome, guys. Have a great weekend.
Always fun to hear Dave in a good mood when the house does well. The marquee matchups seem to fall the way of the good guys. Hopefully our listeners didn't get egg on their face with any of the big spots. And even more intriguing that it's, what, Wednesday when we're recording this, pain, and already they're starting to see some of the liability on the usual suspects.
Absolutely. I think the public is passionate, especially early on. The bankrolls are a little bit more plentiful, and so they like firing early. And that's the one advantage, I think, with Bet Online, right? And you can talk shit and talk about their limits. There is a level of, hey, we're going first. And it takes some balls to do that. So you got to tip your cap to them regardless of what the limits may be. I know they have the rebet functionality. So you can end up with a lot more than their opening nickel limits on some of those games.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Harbaugh prop. I was poking around on that. I mean, move from $1.50 out to $2 for him to be the head coach of the Wolverines for spring practice. I do have to give BetOnline a little bit of credit. They, you know, gave me at least a long shot odds to survive those particular props for Lock It In when it kicks off next Monday. So that's thankful and made me the odds on favorite to win the betting challenge for week one. So hopefully I don't disappoint any of our listeners that want to try and back us up. But
I do find it funny, first, by Payne, the way, that they are willing to funny. Prey on your downfall and potentially profit as well.
I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, I know I'm going to outlast everybody else on this show. No knock on Cousin Sal, Rachel, and Clay. I'm like a cockroach. I keep coming back no matter what. So, I mean, they can take as much money as they want on me to be the first one kicked off the show. But I'm going to be there. I mean, as long as we're on the air, I have no intentions of going anywhere else. God only knows what I'll say in this podcast to try and offend somebody's sensibilities, but, you know, that's completely different.
Yeah, that's always been my fear, is just saying something that's going to ruin your reputation.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I'll be collateral damage from pain inside or shrapnel on the podcast, but if it hasn't impacted me yet from my longstanding relationship with Clay, I feel like we're safe here.
Yeah, we're positive. Well, I enjoy Clay. I like Clay.
So, all right, we've done the games. We've talked about some of the biggest matchups. We've had the bookmaker's perspective. Dusty gave his thoughts on a game we didn't have a chance to get into in greater detail with Tulsa against Texas. But, Payne, where are we taking our money from week one and easy cash with UNLV and rolling it to the window come Saturday this
weekend? It's ugly again. It's not going to be fun. 3-7-8.
Tell me we're going back to the Mountain West. Tell me we're going back to the Mountain West.
3-7-8. Let's go Colorado State. Home dog plus 13.5. This is trending up. I would obviously love to get 14 here, and I'm holding out just a little bit to get 14. But I think 13.5 is fine. But again, I'm holding out for 14. But we'll grade it officially at 13.5.
Got a little barking dog in the background. My pup around here may agree with our selection more so than the Jaguars-Giants way that we assessed on the NFL podcast. One thing to keep in mind with this game, Payne, I feel like we're either going to be on a dead right or dead wrong sign where Colorado State has a chance to either win the game outright or they just absolutely get boat raced, and I have to downgrade them even further than what I've done power ratings through the first two contests.
Well, I'm an optimist, unlike you, so I'm going to go with the former. And this is...
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. I think that they're going to have a chance to win this game outright. I don't really think the I mean, famous last words, right? That the number's not going to come into play. But I wouldn't discourage anybody if they wanted to play, you know, a few bucks here or there on the money line, thinking that Mike Bobo's team actually gets things going this week against a team that's a little overrated.
Yeah, I think Arkansas is a little overrated. Didn't really impress me last week. The quarterback play is extremely shoddy, and now you're laying, you know, nearly two touchdowns on the road. I know what Colorado State's look like, but again, we're getting some perception. This line, man, I don't have the look-ahead number in front of me, but I want to say it was roughly in the 6.5 range before the last 2 weeks. This feels like a last stand for Colorado State at home.
There is no doubt about it, and it's not often that Mountain West teams get to host SEC opponents. You have to imagine that'll be an electric atmosphere in Fort Collins, a game that you, of course, can see on CBS Sports Network, should you want to try and watch your money go to work for you. Payne, before we close up shop, any parting remarks? I mean, as we put a bow on week two of a college football slate, relatively unattractive as far as marquee games to watch, but still obviously plenty of betting value to be found out
there. Yeah, it's still the college football podcast, obviously, but we are running the NFL Pick 5 contest. You have until Sunday games go off to sign up for that. BetTheBoard.footballcontest.com, $5,000 up for grabs, weekly prizes. It's absolutely free to enter. Tell a friend, tell your coworkers, and sign up for that contest because it's absolutely free. Weekly prizes. Everything about it is just the structure of the contest is fantastic. Not patting ourselves on the back, but it's a good contest to join. It's absolutely free.
Simple, straightforward, and no risk for those NFL enthusiasts out there to try and get involved, get a little skin in the game on our dime, try and make some cash just in time for the holidays. So check out that contest. Also, go over to iTunes, rate us, tell everyone in the world how much you love us with 5 stars. It goes a long way to kind of show a little bit of appreciation. Again, we do all of this for you guys. Love our listeners, love the interaction on social media, despite the fact that Dusty's going to have to probably develop thicker skin if he's going to get trolled week in, week out.
We did crown the winner, by the way. We did the iTunes winner yesterday. He came out, claimed his prize, and we talked about this. Go into iTunes, leave that 5-star review, and leave a nice little sentence. Every couple weeks, we're just going to pick at random through a little simulator we have a winner. And so if you've left a 5-star review and a nice little comment, you'll go into the simulator. You can win a prize. It's going to be a Visa gift card and some Bet the Board swag. So we announced that yesterday on the NFL Week 1 podcast, which you should listen to. L. Peterson came out, claimed his prize, so he's going to be hit with a nice little swag pack.
Best part is he said he's offered 2 reviews and Bet the Board was one of the 2 reviews he's ever done on iTunes. So we appreciate it, Al Peterson, if you're out there listening. For Dusty Dvorak, follow him on Twitter. Dave Mason, BOL, you can follow him there as well. Payne Insider, some great information in addition to the podcast to get you ready for the weekend. And I am, of course, your host, Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. Best of luck with your week 2 college football investments. And come, we'll call it 10:30, 11 o'clock Eastern, we'll see you at the window with that Colorado State ticket.